Welcome to our next Work Healthy podcast interview. I'm John Ryan, and today we're talking about learning and development. And I'm delighted to co-present today's podcast with my friend and colleague, Joyati Banerjee, who's a business consultant and leadership coach. Many people are often surprised that the Healthy Place to Work assessment process includes an element that focuses on learning mindset. The truth is that with so much change affecting people and organizations, if you don't believe that you can learn, develop, adapt, and grow, you may fight change because it'll frighten you. And that can lead to conflict and disharmony, which can be bad for your health and relationships. So in today's podcast, we continue our focus on India and are delighted to speak with MVN Rao, who is Head Corporate Learning and Development, Larsen & Toubro Group of Companies, who employ around 250,000 people. We discuss new world competencies, change career paths, the real-life experience and application of AI in L&D, the hyper-personalization of the learning experience, and how L&D can be a critical differentiator of your employer brand. I started our interview by asking, how can you possibly create an organizational learning strategy that delivers everything required in a new world of work?
No, as a corporate head of learning for a diversified conglomerate, because we are not into one single business, we are a portfolio of businesses. We have a business in manufacturing, we have a business in services, IT, professional services. Then we also work in projects, doing large turnkey design to execute kind of projects across the world. So when you have a company of that kind, actually the role of a corporate learning and development also is significantly like you mentor many businesses. You actually have learning partners in different businesses. It is not that actually you're doing everything for everybody. So while you do focus on certain amount of co-creating the overall learning strategy for the executive levels of the organization along with the people strategy. But you also mentor the learning partners who are actually working in the individual businesses because they focus on certain the real-time needs of that particular business in addition to the leadership needs or the project management needs or the technical needs which are common across the entire conglomerate or taken care of by the corporate. And whereas the individual needs which are very specific to the business are taken care of by that. So while we design and co-create the learning strategy, we also work in terms of mentoring the independent company learning teams which are there in the conglomerate. And in addition to that, I mean, as like all of us, we need to run the operations efficiently too, because we not only talk about strategy, but we need to execute on the strategy. So we need to run the operations efficiently, and then we need to keep transforming the operations to make it more efficient and effective on an ongoing basis. Then we also keep working on org-wide processes and systems. Like we have a learning management system, learning experience platform, and these kind of things are done at a centrally and which we drive from the corporate kind of story. And we also drive the learning pedagogy in terms of the innovations in digital learning or anything which is coming up in the latest in the learning space. How do you bring it into the company? How do you become a window to the best practices in the world and bring them into the corporation? And these are, and the new way of doing things. Basically, if you say what is happening new, somebody says learning in the flow of work or something like that, people talk about how it is actually going to pan out, work out the proof of concepts, do the few pilots here and there, and then make sure that it can be adapted in the whole company as a whole. So if you look at it broadly, we co-create the learning strategy, we mentor the independent company learning partners, we run the operations wherever we need to run, we put in the new processes and systems, and we also keep trying to bring in the best of the practices into the organization in terms of innovation. So these are broadly some of the areas which keeps me busy. And of course, in addition to managing the stakeholders, managing the external environment, trying to connect with the whole world and collaborations, associations, and so on and so forth. So because these are the ways which we bring in the best of the things. And the formulation of the learning strategy when we talk about it, because again, it cannot be like when you are a conglomerate or a single product company. It's very different. If you are a manufacturing company purely making a product which you have been making for years together. So the learning strategy is evolved out of the people strategy and you work on that. So the learning strategy is not that we make every year. It's like actually once you make a particular kind of a business, what is the business portfolio going to be? What is the kind of business going to be like? So we actually work on some things which are more reasonable period of time, which are defined. The career archetypes are defined. The leadership competencies are defined. But we also keep adding to that the shifts in the business and impact on the capabilities. Like let's say, for example, digital is a very important shift that's taking place. How do you bring in ESG, the environment, societal, and the governance factors into the business? There's an energy transformation that is taking place. We have got big energy portfolio businesses we have in the company. The DEI is a very big space that has come up in the last few years in a big way in the corporation. So how do you add these things to the otherwise the study elements of the entire the leadership pipeline building of the company? And of course, we do a decentralized development that is required through mentoring. Suppose a particular business like IT requires certain skills to be built for their employees. Their learning partners work on it, but we try and help them out with respect to some of these things. So in terms of the learning strategy, it is not all we build ground up every year. We build some of the elements of it are built from the people strategy because of the definition of the business and the direction in which we are going. There are new elements that keep getting added on to that particular thing. And the third one is that any specific need that need to be taken up by a particular business or their competition or their landscape in which they operate in, I think they work on certain kinds of skills they need to look at. So there are a variety of things which we do to make that particular kind of a learning strategy, as I see.
I'm just interested because we talk about all the new technologies and the new ways that learning has been delivered. Are there things that you used to do in the past that you've sort of said, no, let's just kill that. Let's move on from that. So, I mean, is the sort of the 2-week formalized training in a face-to-face location, is that dead or is it still alive?
No, we have a significant amount of learning that is done face-to-face still. And a significant amount of digital learning is also done in the organization. Just for example, we do, let's say, around 7.5 to 8 days of training per person per year across the corporation. And digital takes around maybe 1.5 days of that. And then there is a classroom component. So there are various elements that go into it. Compliance training is there. Digital learning is there. Then the women leadership training programs are there. Then we have actually the leadership competency building is there. Technical training is there. Project related training is there. Job skills related training is there. IT related training is there. So the variety of components that make up, because if you have to do your job effectively, you require a variety of things. You require the basic job skills, how to use your basic computers and such stuff. Then you need to know your technical skills or the domain skills. Then depending upon the job, you require the functional capabilities. Then you require the competencies that you need to have for delivering on the job. And then you actually need the leadership inputs. Then you require the new age transformative skills like digital or ESG or whatever it is. So it's a layer on layer that is built in so that a person is effective and he can deliver on that. So we use a combination of both digital as well as classroom, and both we call digital learning. We use a mix of all these things that what is appropriate for that particular thing. But digital has taken a big route because the kind of work we do, our people are spread all over the place. So to make them get learning wherever they are operating from and in the flow of the work, digital becomes a very important thing. But interestingly, digital, the penetration is very little beyond the so-called job skills and the leadership and competency skills. But in the pure technology, what we use, I think there is not much of a digital component that have been built in that particular area. So we need to actually still use the little chalk and talk kind of a method at some points of it. Then we need to create safe practice methods for them to practice in the laboratories. There's so that actually the people become competent to deliver on that. So we need to use a variety of it, whatever is the most suited for actually making the learning to happen for that particular kind of people. So these are all actually nothing like actually something has gone out of the window or something is totally dead and gone, but it's there. It is there appropriately we use for different kinds of things.
Okay.
So MVN, so we talked about all of this, right? Bringing best practices in classroom and digital. So how do you actually figure out from which mechanism will work for what, right? So is it with so many different businesses, demographics, life cycle, the kind of product? So how do you actually go about figuring out what's best suited for what needs overall, right? Where will it have impact? So what's the method that you use?
So actually, I mean, look at it this way, Jyoti. I mean, if the information is to be shared, Like, let's say, for example, if I'm doing a compliance training or where a code of conduct or something relating to preventer of sexual harassment, everybody need to be trained in that. So it's information to be shared. So you construct an online digital learning program and you can make it available to all the people, and mandatorily they complete that particular thing. That is one set of training. The second one is basically every one of us needs certain kinds of job skills. Like, let's say, for example, I need to be use a Excel spreadsheet or a PowerPoint or use a Power BI or Tableau or whatever it is. They are like most of them become job skills. So for these job skills, we use a combination. There are actually classroom programs where people come around to seeking clarification, but at the same time, you have online programs available for that. Then you have the project skills. Like if I were to become a project manager or a contract manager or a legal manager or whatever it is, there are various role-based jobs that are created. But all these things, which we have a combination of actually classroom, which you actually supplement it with a little bit of digital learning so that they can actually, retention of the learning is enhanced with respect to that. Then comes a layer relating to the leadership, where we use a lot of actually leadership academies, what we have. You do a little bit of digital learning, then come to the classroom for the binding together. So it's a mix. If it is just information share, if it is something to do with basically getting people to learn something with respect to it at their own time, and then we need to comply with it, I think where it is off the shelf, these programs are available, you can complete it. If you have to construct a program exclusively for the company, it takes its own sweet time. So when you construct that particular program for an organization and you make it available to all the people and we needed them to completely use that. The third one is basically use a supplementary. Let them people do these particular kinds of online learning to get to a bare minimum level. And then you come into the classroom for binding together, facilitated session. Then you go to the laboratory. Actually, you do a safe practice so that actually you become a little better when you go back onto the jobs.
So would it be fair to say that because of the industry you're in, that a lot of it is actually face-to-face, because you do need to meet, look at sort of things that you're doing, whether it's construction or, you know, the manufacturing sector? Would that be a fair assumption? Or do you think this is sort of true overall in your experience?
Different kinds. Let's say, for example, for the services part of the business, a significant amount of learning takes place on digital. Because actually, if I have to teach somebody Python, or if I have to teach somebody, let's say, SQL, or any of the software skills, there are learning programs available, there are assessments that are built online, and people can be assessed, and they are widely accepted across the world. Suppose I go to another one, I'm training, let's say, a buyer, or a procurement person, or I'm training a design person. I mean, there aren't very many of those kind of softwares which are available online, where we need to actually, and these are very proprietary, number one. And number two is basically, these are all very close to the organizational competencies. So there we actually try to make sure that you come to a particular place where you get trained on that to go through that particular thing. And leadership, for example, let's say, for example, we tied up with the best of the places in the world to bring in the best of the inputs of the, because it is not about, there is certain competencies which we can teach from within. Like, let's say, for example, if I have to teach somebody welding or manufacturing, we know that particular thing and we can teach our people about it. Suppose if I want to teach somebody about resilience, I want to teach somebody about how do you do conscientious decision making, or I want to teach about how do you make leadership changes. They're the best of the people available in the world, where I think you actually collaborate with them to come and teach those things, what we, our people need to know. So it's a mix of who comes to teach and what methodology we use to teach them. And the third one is who is the person whom we're collaborating or associating with to bring in that kind of knowledge into the organization.
I'm actually really interested to know who are the big collaborators at the moment. So if you want to be at the cutting edge, of, let's say,
so we tie up with the best of the universities of the world. We are with, we can say Harvard. We are with Michigan Ross. We work with London Business School. We work with all the Indian Institutes of Management of India. And we work with the best of the technical institutions of India and the world over. And we actually tie up with all the online service providers, content providers, whether it be the Courseras of the world or the Skillsoft CPOs of the world or Harvard Mentors of the world. So I think we tie up with the best of the content providers to bring the content into the organization. And we tie up with the best of the faculties to make sure that they can actually come and add value to the company.
And in terms of that leadership cohort, I'm just really interested in how the requirements of that leadership group have changed over the years. I mean, just with the pure speed of change in the environment and, you know, dealing with uncertainty, what are the sort of latest skill sets that you're actually finding are required? I mean, is it all about being this agile leader who basically has to be ready for anything at any moment in time?
No, but fundamentally, the leadership competencies have more or less remained the same, actually. I mean, if you have to say that, I mean, they are time tested with respect to our ability to actually inspire people, ability to actually manage change, ability to actually bring about transformation in the way we do things, ability to shrink strategically to decide where to play and how to win. These are all very time tested for all levels of the leaders. I think they continue to remain there. So actually the forms and some things change. Like let's, for example, a few years back, we didn't talk about how do you use digital models in doing your business. So how do you actually make the leaders start thinking about their business from the perspective of how do I reach the customer using digital? Number two is that how do I make my entire business models very, very conscious with respect to the ESG? Because ESG has become a very important thing, environment, societal, governance, and such kind of things. And the kind of transformation that you see in the world, but I think it's slow, but it is happening. The energy is becoming green, the hydrogen is becoming green, a variety of these things we have come to play. So I think the leaders need to understand the ecosystem and the context in which they have to actually deploy the leadership competencies. But the basic thinking, acting, engaging continues to remain the same. I don't think it is same because the forms have changed. Maybe 15, 20 years back, the technology wasn't what it is today. Maybe the technology has come in. So we need to understand those things and remain agile. And of course, I need to be resilient enough too, basically with respect to not everything I work out works and it fails. And how do I bounce back and how do I actually get back onto the scene again and keep playing the game? So these are some of the things which we need to keep on, I think, reiterating at different levels of the leadership. And of course, not just about teaching, but it is also about, I need to come back and practice this in the various job opportunities I get in the workplace.
Do you have a team of people who are kind of testing all of the new technologies out there? Because, for example, even with this podcast, straight away, we'll put it into Otter AI, which will do a summary of the whole podcast automatically. And it's there. It's just quite brilliant what it does and the amount of time it saves. So I'm thinking, like, what productivity tools do you see implemented that you need to train your people to kind of use? How many have you tested that are maybe not particularly good? And are you constantly trying to assess the AI tools that are out there and whether or not they could be game changers for your business?
Say Gen AI, let's, for example, we have started an academy for Gen AI. And what we are saying is that I think every person needs to be aware about what Gen AI can do to your job in terms of what are the routine elements of your job, which you can actually utilize the technology to make yourself more productive. So what we are trying to do is that build a generic capability amongst the users as well as the leaders in the organization to understand the technology better. I mean, basically, still a lot of people bandy it around without not knowing really what it can do, because it is not 100% foolproof with respect to what it can produce. But we started using it like learning and development. All my people use a significant, all my colleagues who work, they use AI in terms of actually making their presentations, creating the courses, trying to look at what is the kind of methods which we can use in terms of pedagogy and so on and so forth. They use a lot of the first level research, they use a significant of AI. But in terms of our own courses, I think very interestingly, we started using an AI-built powered coach. Like basically, if I want to help a person to improve his communication, so he speaks onto your video and then it gives him feedback automatically. Or in any interpersonal skills, in the learning, in the flow of the work, if I want to go for a meeting and I want to say this, whether I can say this or not. I mean, they do provide such kind of answers, and they've started trying out a few test cases everywhere. And we have started seeing some traction, but nothing at a very significant level that we can say that it has, everything has changed. I think that's the way I look at it.
It's interesting. I mean, like Jotty, I'm probably taking over a slight bit here, but it's just interesting in terms of assessing sort of even copyright with regard to material that comes out of ChatGPT. I just don't understand how that's going to work, because the information has been got from somewhere. And I think everything will have now copyright ChatGPT on it, like, you know, just to cover yourself.
No, there is a big world outside. I think talking about this language, I think there are a lot of people are saying, I know there is a I think there is a protest in Hollywood about this. I think everywhere we see in the world, there is something. I mean, finally, the creative people have put the creative stuff out there. I mean, we can't use it just like that. There must be ways and means, ethics should be brought into it. And the whole world is working on how do you bring in ethics in the entire usage of the AI. We are also awaiting for some of those things to resolve, and then basically we take into consideration those stuff.
Yes, yes. In fact, there's a big movement out there, which is like democracy, right, on the web. So, and therefore, I mean, not just politically, but also in terms of the ethics and what you can do, can't do. And that's another subject by itself, right? So I'm curious, when you talked about, you know, all of this, right? So just in the context of your organization, you know, also let's just bring it to the context of India and so on, the number of people entering the workforce, right, in millions, in terms of youngsters coming in, varying degrees of education. So how do you see your learning strategy sort of catering to the many, many, many number of people joining the workforce and getting them completely productive, have the kind of right exposure and contribute from a career perspective in the long run, right? How do you see that playing out is just sort of something I'm curious about.
Actually, it'd be very interesting to talk about. We have a concern in our company, I mean, concern in a sister unit called EduTech, which is actually working on enhancing the employability of the graduate engineers by developing various courses and which are supplementary to the classrooms that are educational classrooms with the lecturers do that. We also provide that kind of an additional material. But coming into the people into the company, we have a very honed methodology of how to make people productive faster. What we say, I think very interestingly, one of our supervisors has come out, bosses has come out with a formula. It is called 3W plus 3M is equal to 3EP. 3 weeks of chalk and talk plus 3 months of soft practice or safe practice is equal to 3 years of work experience. The person should be as good as a 3 year experienced person if you can do the first 3.5 months well. So what we do is that everybody who comes in goes to our, we have got technical engineering academies where they go for basically hands-on training with respect to the multidisciplinary of engineering. Then once they go into the workplaces, they actually go through the various kinds of soft practice by doing an item which has already been completed. So they become job ready faster. So that's one of the reasons why we have a lot of fresh engineers and graduates hired in the company, and they go and take up all the lower rank jobs and they grow within the company. So that's something which over a period of time, the learning culture, the learning infrastructure that has been created and the learning mechanisms that have been put in place have made sure that a whole lot of these people get manufactured into becoming very, very thoroughbred professionals very fast.
Mm-hmm. So maybe a question here is, so what are the challenges that you see? Such a mammoth job, right? And in your role, what would be some sort of stumbling blocks that you have to overcome to really create success, right? Maybe every day, every month.
I think actually there is always the difference between intent and delivery, you know, in life. You see, suppose I want to train 3,000, I end up only training 1,200. 1,800 passed by because we didn't have that kind of, at that time, the infrastructure, or they were not available, or they get into the system. So one is actually the miss between the intent to that delivery is a big story by itself. Second one is basically the organization is growing. There is always the desire that we should do a lot more than what we are doing today. That is, you're not doing enough, that you can do a lot more in so many spaces. You're not developing enough project leaders. You're not developing enough people with understanding of project planning, controls, mechanisms that we need to do, because we are doing more than 100,000 projects all over the world. So how do we actually continuously manufacture the talent that is required to do all these kinds of things? So we are always, you're running behind the need, actually. I mean, to that extent, you can always be saying that while we do a lot of things when we talk, but in terms of actually in delivery, sometimes we are a little behind what the expectations of the business. So that's something which we need to worry about. And the third important thing is that how do we actually make learning Because learners have changed, actually. If you look at it, the work has significantly changed. The workforce has changed because people choose between a Netflix entertainment versus learning these days. So, I mean, it's like, how do you make people learn with the shorter attention spans? How do you actually make them the shorter doses of the learning make available to them at the time when they need it? Because it is not necessarily like Esther years when we go for a classroom and we study for 20 days and come back and we may use only 10% of that. But I think that level of patience is much less now. So I think neither the organization is interested to give that kind of inputs, nor the individual is willing to receive that kind of an input. So how do you marry these kind of things? So the learner aspirations, the learner attention spans, the organizational requirements, the numbers, our ability to deliver. I think you have challenges in plenty. And of course, how do you marry? There are so many, partners outside who come and tell us that this can happen, that can happen. But how do you marry all these things into what is actually required in the company? So I think that alignment of the needs with the available service providers, the kind of delivery that we are delivering, the learner aspirations, the needs, I mean, enough number of challenges we have, actually. I mean, I'm sure.
I'm so getting
you
tired.
Never have a day which says that, oh, I've achieved it all and there's nothing much to do.
I've finished. And in terms of the hyper-personalization of work, I mean, part of that is the hyper-personalization of learning. I mean, so many people now are, I mean, it used to be the case when you joined an organization that it looked after your learning journey. Whereas now with the tools that are available to people, they're on their own learning journeys. So how do you integrate those two things? How do you assess where they're at in terms of their own personal learning journey and then the match with regard to the organizational learning journey?
Personalization is like this. For example, we have democratized the learning to let people know what they can learn. Like, let's say, for example, we have widely circulated what are the competencies that are required for different levels of the job and different jobs. And we also made many of these online platforms available and accessible to all. And we have curated a whole lot of learning paths for the various competencies. We have got actually role-based academies. Like we have got a digital academy, ESG academy, Gen AI academy, finance academy, HR academy, DEI academy. So what we have said is that for each of these roles which people perform, I think there are curated learning paths that have been created and they are made widely publicized and known to the people concerned. And there are skill benchmarks that are available. Suppose if X MVN is interested to know how good am I in decision making. So there are actually skill benchmarks that are actually available. So where you can assess for yourself and then see with respect to what I can do. I think the intuitive courses that are suggested thanks to the new age platforms, that based on that, you do those courses and then reassess yourself at the end of it and see how you are improving in terms of your skills and you get certifications for that. And you get a lot of nudges and recognition in the company. I mean, basically, you realize that in the present day world, you need recognition for every small thing. So you need to have leaderboards, you need to nudge the people, you need to say that you're doing great with respect to this, and then you do a whole lot of personalization. So personalization is actually about encouraging people to personalize. And while you create organization-wide roles and role-related curated learning paths, but what we also tell is that you can learn what you want to learn at any time you want to learn. And then the very fact that over the last few years, the kind of traction which we see in that subject, I think it tells us that I think people are learning on their own and employees are willing to learn. And they are investing their own time significantly outside of the working hours or whatever they do with respect to that. That's a very positive sign where employees, when they are asked of that, you prepare yourself for the next role and prepare yourself for the next job you want to do or prepare yourself for the career you want to make it. So there is a certain amount of traction. This is a very significant shift from the previous years, eras, where it was all organization spoon feeding. With respect to, okay, you require this, I will give you this, and you will get only at this time you will get it, or after so many years you will get it. So there is a shift that's taken place, and the employees themselves are taking the responsibility. The organizations are more for providing the resources and making sure the infrastructure is there, and also provide the kind of a supportive environment and create certain kind of guides and instruction manuals with respect to how to actually traverse through all these myriad of, I think, platforms and so on and so forth, so that people can learn on their own. But in the end, the proof of the pudding is you have to do your job. If you do your job well, you progress. To do your job well, you need to learn something new. So how do I actually create learning in the flow of the work and nudge to learn in the flow of the work? What is the kind of infrastructure and support you create for that? So it's a mix of both the things. And the strategy intent is sometimes you hit the bullseye, sometimes you miss it. But I think the direction is that.
And I'm just wondering, with so many people doing their own learning and maybe discovering different courses or doing stuff on YouTube, is there any mechanism within your organization where people share? Like, if I've come across a great course or something, you know,
do you formalize that? You can actually, because you come across a course, you can actually suggest to somebody else and you get a point for that. And it's actually, how do you encourage? Because there's another kind of a thing. Suppose I do a course and I think John will benefit from it, I actually recommend that course to John. And if John does it, some points come to you. So basically, it's like, how do you nudge people to create a peer learning, social learning, community learning, learn from one another, post questions. And we have actually got experts who have been identified in the company who can answer those questions when you post those kind of questions. So internal leaderboards, internal, places where you can actually seek out answers for your questions and so on and so forth. So technology has made all these things possible. And then we tap into all those things, actually.
Because that could be a mechanism for feedback if people keep sending me courses on dealing with difficult people or conflict.
No, ultimately you have peers, you have friends. And that's what friends are for, isn't it? I mean, book, I want to forward to somebody. Like WhatsApp is full of actually forwards, isn't it?
Yeah,
I mean, each one wants somebody else to learn what you have learned, or I have seen a joke, I want to share a joke. I mean, that's the way I think people are. The technology has made it very easy for everybody.
I think that personalization, that sharing is important.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, it's just that whole mechanism now. People expect their learning platform to replicate Netflix and kind of have suggestions coming up that this is probably what would be really useful for you. Just my last one here, I'm just interested to know whether or not, from an employer branding point of view, is your organization leveraging your learning and development? Is it seen as something that actually is a differentiator between going to one company over another, that, listen, I could go there, I could get paid more, whatever, maybe, but this organization has a wonderful L&D capacity to help me and my career go forward. Is that really, you know, marketed as part of the employer brand?
Yeah, in fact, actually, it's a very important part of our employee value proposition. Because I think on the lighter side, let me tell you that we are called L&T, it's called learning and training.
Okay.
as an organization which has been, I mean, in the business for eight decades or more, I mean, and it's not an exaggeration to say it's a dream company for any engineer in this country. And every engineer worth his salt would love to work in L&T. And he has worked. There are many senior people who have worked with us in the past and who are leading various companies in different places. So we bring the best of the people. We, I think, grow people from within. And we have a philosophy of growing people from the within. Our present chairman, managing director, is a person who joined us as a trainee in the organization. And the previous chairman, managing director, was also a trainee in the organization. So it's like enough number of, folklore of stories are there where people have come. Actually, they become, I think, a better versions of themselves. And the organization has invested. I think we have created a huge learning infrastructure, both the digital as well as physical. And also we created a supportive learning supportive learning culture. And in fact, our values and vision talks that we will be a continuously learning organization. So right from the vision, the alignment of the strategy, the kind of infrastructure that has been created, the leadership support that is provided, and the employee value proposition, and people actually have grown from within. So for the simple reason is that giving career opportunities and learning opportunities is the way. This is one of the important parts of our employee value proposition.
So hearing a lot about the systems, infra, EVP, and then I'm also thinking that how does it work in terms of the person who comes into the organization, right, also works with a manager, right? And how do you sort of ensure that relationship really also creates an enabling environment for learning, right? Oftentimes, systems, resources exist, and then the relationship with the manager or the role of the manager in saying, okay, am I going to give some time off to do this? Am I going to encourage it or not? Will make so much of a difference. And how do you at this scale really sort of ensure that the experience of every person at that microcosm, right, is really the right experience? And isn't that the key as well? So I'm just curious, how does that one figure that one out? Hmm.
No, it's a very interesting one, Jyoti. I think you realize that for a large company like ours, finally, a company may be huge, but for me, my immediate supervisor and next supervisor is the company. I mean, anything beyond that, it's like a very big monolith kind of a story. So what happens is actually we have understood people leadership as a very, very important competency for every individual manager. So we have defined the people leadership of the organization that every people leader, any person who has a person reporting to him is defined as a people leader. And his people leader is supposed to demonstrate excellence. It is called L&T, People Leadership Excellence Framework. And what we do is that you need to demonstrate excellence in personal, then relationships, in terms of actually performance, in terms of developmental, in terms of actually leadership. And we have created a actually internal 270 degree tool wherein every single people manager gets assessed with respect to the kind of where he stands with respect to that. And we have created a whole lot of academy-based, people leadership academy, and a whole lot of courses towards that. And for every large program, whenever we do that, and we make sure that we have a supervisor interface, that means that before a course begins, we have a conversation with the supervisor to tell him what is he going to learn and how is he need to support it and when he comes back. So the variety of interfaces that have been created to make sure that, and over a period of time, what happened is that very interestingly, since there are so many of us who have joined the organization very young and have grown with the organization, I think the culture in the organization is one of encouraging learning. I think that culture of actually, I have learned that way, so I enable others also to learn kind of a story. And the learning infrastructure, both physical as well as the digital, has been created to enable the people to learn. And then nobody actually goes around. At least I don't come across people who come and tell my boss is not allowing me to actually study or learn or something like that. Yeah, people, there may be work pressures will be there. They will be always there. And people will have to find some time to learn on their own, and there will be days when there will be a little lull and they can learn. Or I think they do it offline also, wherever they are with respect to that. So I think on the whole, there is a lot of encouragement. There will be always a few people who will actually, I think, go against the grain, but we will have another ways of actually dealing with those kind of people. So, but broadly, what we say is that we expect them to demonstrate people leadership and support the learning culture in the organization.
I'm just interested to know that manager role, because what we're finding is that the, you know, people are saying the role has changed, but they haven't actually changed the role description themselves. How do you see the role of a manager changing in the new world of work?
I mean, John, look at it this way. I mean, in the last 5-7 years, I've seen all the three of them, there is a shift. The work itself is shifting. The workplaces are changing. The workforce aspirations are also changing. So it's a very difficult time for a leader, actually, honestly. It is not the way it was, much simpler or much more direct, and where the context was a little more stable and the changes were not so fast a few years back. Now, everything seems to change a little too fast. To that extent, it puts a little more onus on the leader or the manager concerned. But that's a challenge, actually. I mean, I'm sure they're paid more also for those kind of reasons, because it is not easy. I think the workplaces are becoming like anywhere, everywhere, all over the place. The workforce has become like, work is not the only thing for me. I have a life beyond it kind of aspirations they have. And actually, the workplaces are also like you are talking about it differently. So it is becoming difficult. And but at the same time, I think we are trying to help the leaders to understand. That is where, when we say that the last two pieces of our excellence framework, that is your relationship, developmental, and the leadership experience which you need to give to the people, it's about actually rediscover yourself. Relook at your own styles of doing things from the past to the new way of doing things, and then actually make those kind of shifts. So because unless you make the shift with respect to, there is a change that is permanent now. The people are not the same what it was earlier. People are changing. So how do I actually make the shifts within me instead of my sticking to the same old way of doing things and say that that's worked for me in the past and it is going to work for me in the future irrespective of the fact aspirations of change. So how do I actually make these changes? And that's the reason why I say that it is not very easy, but it's a very challenging one because the job description may look the same. I still need to assign job. I need to still execute work. I still need to do that. But how it is to be done as an undergoing change? I think that's where the challenge lies. And we try and see how we can help our managers get better and better and better. Ultimately, it all boils down to between the manager and the next supervisor and the individual concerned. So how do I actually create this dyadic or triadic relationship better and better? And interestingly, it's all about creating the necessary role models for them to look at, creating the necessary competencies within them. And of course, the third one is the employees themselves put the pressure back on them to make sure that they deliver value differently. So all these three things come together. And for the simple fact, the organization is delivering value continuously, so it must be working.
I just find that role differentiation really interesting. One organization I was dealing with, they said that the newer generation want their managers to be psychologists. So actually, they've trained their managers to be psychologists. So that it's a real interesting shift, you know, the expectation there. Another organization, 50% of the manager's bonus now is actually related to the health and well-being of their staff. So it's a huge shift in terms of what the role of a manager is as nearly more a performance coach. So are you mm-hmm. seeing any of that?
Yeah, I mean, what you said very rightly, because everybody wants a manager to be a superman, you know. You need to be a psychologist, you need to be a performance coach, you need to be very molly cuddling, you need to be a coach, you need to be a counselor, you need to be everything. So, but in the end, he has to deliver outcomes, isn't it? I mean, he has to deliver a job to be done through the people with whom he has been working with. So while all times manager's job, if you look at it, I think traditionally, what is the definition of a company? Or a company is there to deliver performance and manager is there to make that happen. Manager here, I'm using ubiquitously, it could be a chairman or it could be an immediate manager somewhere, but everybody is there to deliver performance and deliver performance through people who are there in the corporation. So fundamentally, I think we need to understand that if the organizational purpose is not met, I think nobody need to exist in the company. You see, ultimately, it's all about why you are there for and what you need to deliver. And each one needs to focus on what they need to deliver. And I think it's not a place where it's all about actually mollycoddling and then it's all nice to do things kind of a story. I mean, it is a tough world we operate in, and then we need to deliver outcomes and results to the customer.
Yeah, I was interviewing Unilever in India last week, and they were saying it's about a high challenge, but a high support culture. So, you know, you're and I like thinking about it in those ways. There's a book called Thinking Fast and Slow. And I actually think work now is working fast and slow, because you've got a, you know, an intensity of the work and how it comes at you and the like. But then you also need to very quickly recover. So you need to kind of just slow down and take a step off the treadmill and just take a break for 10 minutes. And that recovery and building that into how you work, I think, is really interesting going forward. One final question for me, just I'm interested to see your view on careers. The old style sort of, you join an organization at 20, you're loyal to that organization all your life and you leave in your 60s or the like. That seems to be gone. And now people move around a lot. And is that something to be welcomed? They take career breaks. So those gaps that used to be sort of, you know, the recruitment officers, haha, I've spotted a gap. That means you probably did something strange. We're thinking differently about that. So how do you see careers now and the role that L&D plays in terms of developing people?
So actually, I've seen both kinds of the world. Basically, I've seen a smaller organization and a large corporation. I mean, when you look at it, large corporation like that, when you find that when a canvas of opportunities are available within the same corporate, People need not take those kinds of shifts from one to the other to meet their career goals. If you have started working in sales, you want to do a people management job, or you want to do some other kind of a job, it's possible in the same company or an organization.
Yeah.
And provided it has a culture of creating an internal movement of people, internal marketplace, and it's possible and can be done. But as you rightly said, there is a big shift in amongst all of us. We say that now, if you have started off on your own and failed, we don't look down upon anybody. Now, we believe that you have gained experience and you have actually tried to do something different. So there is a career break in your CV. I don't think as a recruiter, we all look at it as you gained more experience in a different way, finally. It's all about how do we look at those experiences that are gained and how it can be utilized by the corporation. So it's more of actually what you bring to the table than what you don't bring to the table. So I think if there are people who have made it very big, I think you can still find people, even in corporations like Microsoft, people join fresh and they become the chairmen of the company. And there are people in smaller companies who keep moving from company to company or try different kinds of things, and they make it big too. So there is no one way of doing things, I guess. It's up to that individual and his own orientation and what he or she wants to do. And of course, the organizations have become a lot more open to all kinds of experienced people, gig workers, people who come for short assignment, people who come and do a consulting work for us for a little while, and then they come back a little later. People who have worked with us in the past, they want to come back to work. I think all of us have become a lot more open to a different kind of experienced personnel to come into the workplace and contribute. I think they have become a lot more democratized and a lot more inclusive in that way compared to what we have seen maybe two decades back or a decade and a half back. I think that's
the way we look at it. Yeah, and when you say that, to me, what strikes me is this whole diversity. We didn't talk much about that, but you did mention it in passing, the whole area of diversity and inclusion. That's a big, big shift happening all over, of course, and in India too, right? I think the movement in terms of getting more women in the workforce and an obvious boost to the economy, just in terms of female labor force participation being very different from many parts of the world, and other diversity, right? Special needs and so on. So how do you see that playing out, and also in the context of learning, right? How do you see that sort of coming together?
Actually, when we talk about diversity, equity, and inclusion, I think as an organization that has been around 8 decades, we have been always diverse. I mean, as you know, in India is a very diverse country. I mean, we have people from different places speaking different languages, different kinds of backgrounds. They come together to work. So that kind of diversity we always had. And people come from different things. And traditionally, I mean, somehow for the kind of work which we have been doing, the projects in far-flung places and all that, women have not been in plenty on the field jobs, but they have been traditionally in the support jobs and so on, office jobs. But that is one area where we believe that we are trying to work hard to bring in a significant proportion of them and create the kind of an equitable workplace so that they can actually not only come in, but actually thrive in the workplace and grow in the workplace. That is an attempt that is being made. And we are also trying to see how do you manage multi-generations. For a corporation of 8 decades, I think we have got people with 5 different generations, 6 different generations working together. So how do you actually create a learning options and learning strategy for each one of them is very different. One learns, like what John asked about hyper-personalization. If you are talking about a 50-year-old gentleman, is very different than a 20-year-old person. So what is the kind of hyper-personalization? So the learning also becomes how do you make it inclusive and democratized to the extent what he or she wants it, the way he or she wants it. But there's a lot of emphasis which we are doing in developing women leaders. We have got an entire total career archetype which we are working on called women leaders now. In addition to technical business leaders and the project leaders, we work on women leaders now. So we are wanting to make sure that we have plenty of them come up and take their rightful place in the corporation. And then we are working on that particular piece of it in a big way. So we have got actually very, very significant programs which we have tied up with various partners for the various kinds of women and women in the other ability people in the company, and then to bring them more in numbers into the corporation and then make it. Because that agenda for the women has picked up in the last 4 to 5 years, But other kinds of diversity and inclusion, we always had in one form or the other. Maybe I think the ethos of the company is to have inclusive orientation, because we, different kinds of people come together to deliver on a project in a company like ours. So yeah, but how do you bring in that additional diversity factors into the company? And equity. Equity is very important. What is it different from equality? Equity means different people require different things at different times. So how do we actually make the organization understand those elements also? Because otherwise we all think everybody is equal in the eyes of the law kind of a story. So, but how do you make it for different women and different kinds of people? We need to create different facilities, infrastructure, and do things at different points of their careers. So these are all the shapes which we are making in the company. And hopefully, I think in the next few years, we will see and hear a lot more about the DEI from a corporation like ours.
Yeah, one good point that you make, you know, that in my experience, you know, running a lot of women's leadership programs, you know, of late, I find that sort of the ecosystem has to be supportive. And I hear that from a lot of women, that one is the sheer critical mass of number of women has to be high enough to make it stick. And then the surrounding ecosystem in terms of conversation, in terms of sometimes facilities and so on. And that's what really makes them not drop off, right? In mid-career and so on. So that seems to be a sticking point. And I wonder what's your experience now.
No, actually, Jayanti, I think we are a microcosm of the society. I think finally people go back home and homes are in the society. And people have conditioning that has been built over hundreds of years. And this shift is taking place, actually. I see it. I think the younger lots of people, the younger lot of managers, I think there is a lot more allyship that is being built in the corporation. There's a lot more sponsorship that is being built for the women leaders in the company. And more managers are encouraged to become the allies and sponsors for the women, so that actually they take their rightful place. I think we see a lot of green shoots everywhere. But yeah, there are some places where it is still not actually taken the deep roots, but I think hopefully we'll do that.
Brilliant. I mean, that's a lovely way to kind of, because we're coming close to the end of this, and I'd just love to kind of get a sense of your view of the future. What are we going to see in the next 5 to 10 years in terms of this whole area?
Actually, I mean, I would say that already we see the trends that is there is going to be more and more responsibility on the employee, because as you talked about the careers, I mean, each one is responsible for their our own career. People make their choices, whether I become a gig or whatever it is. So the more I take those kind of choices, the more responsibility for the learning rests on that individual concerned. And I personally believe that there is more and more integration of learning in the flow of the work. That means do it just in time, not too much, just much before it's time, or don't give large lumps of learning. I think that particular thing will go out of the window as I see it. More personalization. I think people would like to pick and choose. It's a buffet of items that are there. People would like to make their own plate of full of meal, what they would like to do with respect to that. That's the kind of a thing that will happen. And there is more practice, and learning on the job is a responsibility to learn, and the skill shifting of the employees concerned, especially the new age companies. I mean, what I see is that the new age company, the business models are also continuously evolving. So what kind of skills they build, how do they build it, how long is the stability is there with respect to that. But what I notice is that more and more responsibilities with the individual, and organization's job is to be creating more and more opportunities and creating the necessary infrastructure and creating the necessary enabling environment for that the people become more adept at what they do so they can deliver more value. So it's not that the way which we have done it for the decades, that is, resources are very limited and it is not available to all. I will give it to a few people as and when I need to give it kind of a story. That was in the past. But as I see in the future, I mean, I need employees who are actually capable. And it is up to you to become capable. And my job is to make sure the facilities and the infrastructure is available. As I see it, that's the shift that is going to take place based on, in fact, very interestingly, John, I was told that in the Esther years, I mean, I used to rarely find people who used to invest in their own learning. Personal learning when you are working in a corporation. But nowadays we find lots of young people trying to take up courses on their own, paying their own money out of their own income, and actually doing that. So I think there is the shift that's taking place that side. And I think that trend will actually pick up speed as we go forward.
I mean, that's something I'd be saying to my kids, is that it's really important that they don't just, you know, become sort of dependent on any organization, that they actually keep their skill set alive and fresh to the needs of employers so that they make themselves employable. And those transferable skills are the key, because one of the things, you know, people are still asking at interviews about, you know, 10 years time, where do you see yourself and that? Whereas, like, I don't even know 6 months time where I see myself.
No, we stopped asking that question in interviews, John. No.
Thank heavens.
Well, listen, tell me something about yourself. Right?
What's your greatest weakness?
That is so true. But, you know, I do have one thing, you know, very different though in all of this. I'm very curious, Evian, you know, you worked just so many years, so many industries, long time here. What's most meaningful for you in this role as a person?
Yeah, actually, I mean, what is meaningful is that, I basically have a helping orientation. I think what is my driver and call is basically how do I help people, managers, everybody to become a better version of themselves. I think I feel I'm in a very sweet spot where every conversation I do or every time I listen to someone and any time I spend a little time helping a person to get to connect him to something or do something which is useful, which will make him a better version of themselves. I think that's the best thing that could happen. I think I really enjoy that element of that particular role, actually, as I see it. In addition to many other things out there, but I mean, the very fact that, okay, a conversation I did or somebody felt like, yeah, you got an aha moment with respect to, okay, I learned this particular input, that insight helped me or the guidance helped me. I think that's where I think it gives you the joy. I think learning and development gives you that fun.
I can relate to that.
What are you, for all the training courses you've attended over the years, was there any that actually stood out and what was it and what difference did it make?
John, I've attended many, many programs, but everything has contributed to me. Every supervisor, every person whom I worked with, every colleague who has worked with me. And it's not just about the courses that you attend, but the conversations, the kind of the mentoring I have received, the kind of coaching I have received. But actually, I think the courses which I have done to become an executive coach and team coach, I think they have actually given me a little more structure in terms of how do I add value to the others kind of a story. But a whole lot of things have helped me. I mean, no more than the domain area, job skills area, technical areas, I think a whole lot of things which I have done along the way.
Well, listen, all I'd like to say, I mean, like, we've just run out of time. I don't know where the time has gone. It's the fastest podcast I think we've ever done, and I'd love to speak for much longer, and hopefully we will in the future. But I think this whole area of learning and development is so critical to the success of organizations moving forward, and I love the fact that you have incorporated that into your employer brand, because I think that's something that's really important. I also think it's maybe an area that we can actually deliver on a multitude of levels, because trying to bring people together in an organization, break down barriers, have fun and socialize can actually be done all within the learning environment. So that's what I think we're going to have to do, is deliver on a multitude of things at the same time. But listen, that it's been a really great joy to talk to you today. And Jyoti, thank you very much for co-presenting this podcast. That's been fun. It's the first time we've done it, so we're showing agility ourselves, and continued success with your business, which is enormous and huge and successful. And it's just interesting, as you say, you've got diversity baked in because you're so big, and just continued success into the future. Thank you so much for the interview.
Thanks, John. I really enjoyed talking about various subjects. Thanks, Jyoti. I think I thoroughly enjoyed it. Thank you.
Brilliant. Pleasure. And after so many years of knowing you, so it was great to sort of spend this time. And I can vouch for your helping orientation, MBN. So, so thank you.
I do hope you enjoyed listening to MBN today. I love the way he sees his organization as a dream place to work, not just a healthy place to work. Also interesting that the biggest competitors to people's learning attention is Netflix. And the way we really have to present options like Netflix does, using those personalized recommendations,
Interesting also to see recognition nudges being used constantly in the organization to build a community of learning. And finally, I love the fact that they see the learning and development as a key part of their employer brand. My thanks to my co-host today, Jyoti Banerjee, who is available to anybody who wants to reach out to talk about creating a healthy place to work in their organization in India. We'll be on further travels around the world, getting more diverse views on how to win in the new world of work. So join us next time on the Work Healthy Podcast.